The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Belgium 1, Portugal 0. 70 minutes of not a whole lot, and then a whole lot of end-to-end gentle violence sticking in the mixer and histrionics. It all means Thorgan Hazard's strike sets up a quarter-final with Italy. Meanwhile, is it possible to write a headline about the Netherlands and the Czech Republic without a terrible pun? Turn off De Ligt, checkmate, projectile schick. Whatever you go with, it's the Czechs that progress against De Boer's 10 men. Also, we'll look ahead to Monday's games. There's your question. And although I can't predict what'll happen, I very much hope Wilson ends today's pod with a 20-minute anecdote about a very Sunderland-specific school song about a giant serpent. This is The Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Wilson, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Natasha Henry, welcome.
Hey, Max.
And hello, John Bruin. You're in the north, John. You're in your homeland.
I'm in Macclesfield, yes. Yeah.
Will you sound more northern? Do you go more northern when you go back home?
Well, that's for you to judge, I suppose.
Oh, you sound about as northern as when you're
as
speaking
normal,
to
yeah.
us from hipster Hackneyland.
Yeah, exactly.
Or wherever it is.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's lovely to be home. You were just pointing out, this won't help the listeners, but to paint a picture with words, out of the window is what?
Where my mum lives is opposite the first Hovis Mill. So you can't get much more northern than that, can you?
Absolutely. That is exactly what I wanted to hear. Right, then let's start in Seville on that bobbly pitch that everyone hates with the enormous technical areas. Belgium 1, Portugal 0. The first game between these two sides in a major tournament. Natasha, what did you think? 70 minutes of nothing and then 20 minutes of just a whole lot of fun, I thought.
Yeah, it was. I think sometimes we just need a game like that. 20 minutes where you've got Pepe just being Pepe, Cristiano Ronaldo throwing his hands down on the floor, you know, Lukaku wanting to have a row with someone. You were just waiting for a goal or a red card. It was brilliant. It made a nice change and it set up a very nice game with Italy, which I'm very excited about.
I mean, there hasn't been, John, a lot of S-housery in this tournament so far. But this really came alight at the end, didn't it? As far as I could tell, every player was booked at least once.
Yeah, I did think it might turn into that. Remember that game in the 2006 World Cup? Netherlands against Portugal ended up with just about everybody booked. And a couple of the players sat with each other in the stands watching the rest of the game continue. It didn't quite go like that. Pep, as I believe it's properly pronounced, supposedly one of the nicest people in football away from the field. I think that forearm smash that he delivered possibly deserved a red card. And then, you know, Kevin De Bruyne got nobbled again in a big game, which wasn't very nice to see. We're getting a bit too used to the sight of Kev tearfully leaving the field, unable to help anyone, and those sort of rather sad pictures of him sat in the stand. One of Portugal's problems is that they've got, and actually judging by the last 20 minutes in which Fernando Santos chucked on what actually looks quite a decent forward line to me, they've got a lot of attacking talent. Unfortunately, Fernando Santos, whose technical area seems to at a certain point place him in the penalty box of Belgium, it was so large, he makes Sam Allardyce look like Ozzy Ardiles in terms of attacking intent. And that, I would suggest, is Portugal's problems. Now, I'm sure, because I know Jonathan quite well, that he is going to point to the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo does not help the rest of the team. But there is such talent in that Portugal team. But yeah, they disappointed, really, didn't they? And if I may finish off, I'm sorry I've gone a bit too long. Natasha may be looking forward to Belgium against Italy, but it would seem that Belgium are going to be a little bit reduced. And so I am looking forward to seeing Nasser Chadli get a run out at this tournament.
Wilson, what did you make of the game?
I think it was a great knockout game. I am habitually critical of Ronaldo, I'm aware of that. But actually, I thought it was something a little bit sad about him tonight. That he was working really hard and he was making runs in a way he doesn't often make runs. I don't know, 12 minutes into the second half, that little dart in from the right to set up Diogo Jota was a brilliant bit of play. And it was unselfish. It was very un-Ronaldo. And yet, he's not quite what he was, and he wasn't able to shape the game to his will. And I don't know if you saw at the end, was a lovely moment of he and Lukaku had this embrace. You have the two highest scorers in Serie A last season, 53 goals between them. And Lukaku consoling Ronaldo is actually quite a poignant sight. The 36, it's almost certainly the last Euros he'll play, maybe the last major tournament he'll play.
Is it the right time to talk about his legacy or not yet? Or is that
well, no, because I mean, he will go, he'll definitely play to break Ali Daei's record. I know he's equaled it, but he I mean, sure, he will try and play at the World Cup. He'll certainly play a handful more games to try and get that record for himself. But and he clearly will take that record for himself. But clearly we're in the beginning of the end now for Ronaldo.
Right. Natasha, I thought it was interesting about Belgium that they talked a lot about, you know, how good they are going forward, but they've got this rickety old defence, like Richard Jolly saying their three centre-backs had a combined age of 101 today. But they kept a clean sheet, and actually they looked pretty secure until Portugal just went dirty long ball, which I also really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they are on the more mature side, but that gives them experience and a bit more knowledge of the game. I think that's why they're not conceding as many goals. You know, they're all experienced players, all played for Premier League clubs or in the Champions League. They know exactly what they're doing. They know how to control the game, how to stop the attacking players. And it's just giving everyone else a bit more lease of life, I think. They're not worrying about what's going on behind them because they know the defenders are people they can trust.
True, but you would have thought if you're an opposition manager, you would look at Vermaelen and Alderweireld and Vertonghen and go, we need to get in behind there. You have your hand up. Also.
Well, yeah, I mean... It struck me tonight was a very un-Belgian way of playing, given how we've seen them play over the last, I don't know how long, since Martinez took over, that they weren't on the front foot, they were sitting deep. And although it felt really unnatural, and although they did concede a load of chances in that final sort of 10, 15 minutes, I wonder if that does suit that back three better. That I think one of the problems they've had, I mean, certainly the game against Denmark in that first half of that game, was when opponents got a run at them. And although Portugal put pressure on them, nobody really got a run at them. It was, you know, it was crosses that was creating the chances. And they will, you know, certainly Alderweireld and Vertonghen are both still superb in the air. I don't think it was ever the best part of the Marlins game. But, you know, when you've got the two of them, he can sweep up behind them. That's fine. So I don't know. I wonder if just... I mean, if that was Martinez's plan, I think it'd be extraordinarily bold. But it sort of worked for them. I'm not sure it'll work always because, they did concede chances. And I don't think it really suits the midfield or the forward line. But I do wonder if for the defenders tonight that actually helped them a bit.
Who in front of them impressed you, John, for Belgium today?
Well, we've got to talk about the goal scorer, haven't we?
Yeah, let's.
The Phil Neville, the Gary Robson, the... Erwin Koeman. Come on,
the help. Frank de Boer.
Frank was better than Ronald, wasn't he?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You're Brian Laudrup.
Well, Michael thinks that Brian is better than him. That was the story there. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
I think Michael was being modest there, but I suppose if you are Michael Laudrup and look like Michael Laudrup, you probably can be modest. And get away with it, yeah. But yes, fantastic goal. And a player who, when I've watched him in the Bundesliga play for Borussia Dortmund, I've often thought, wasn't he at Chelsea? And isn't he another player that they've just let slide and is actually very good? And then Lukaku. I think Lukaku did... It was one of those games, wasn't it, where it's his sacrificial role. He's essentially working hard at the front, taking away the pressure from the players behind him. There was that slightly unfortunate moment in which he was involved in a breakaway and he lost his touch on the ball, which is a bit unfortunate because there had been those quotes, hadn't there, building up to the game where he'd said he was as good as Lewandowski, Ronaldo and Kane. I do think, though, I'm going to give him the pass, though, for that pitch. Is that the last game that we'll see in Seville? I'm sort of hoping so, because it's an absolute pudding of a pitch. And I think the chance towards the end for, is it João Félix that Ronaldo laid on a plate for him? I think on a better surface, he might have done a bit better than that. But, you know, this is, you can see Roberto Martinez after the game delighted with pulling off that victory. But it feels like one of those where his team got put through the mill a bit. Natasha, I think, was right saying about that the experience of the defenders helped them. I'm not sure the age is going to help them, having got through a game like that, because it looked hot, it looked like hard work, and it looked like, especially with Eden Hazard and his injury, if we're talking about predictable muscle strains in tournaments, his has got to be right up there, hasn't it? I mean, you know, when he pulled up with it, I don't know if we'll see him again in the tournament, judging by that, which is a shame. But now, of course, we've got Thorgan Hazard.
And also, you know, those old defenders, they're only going to be older.
Yeah.
When the next game kicks off.
Yeah, that's what
they?
Happens to all of us, yeah.
I thought Lukaku was absolutely brilliant tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the late chance you're talking about when he just sort of lost control of it, he must have been knackered, because he was absolutely, just making those arcing runs constantly. So I was writing a sidebar, looking at him and Ronaldo.
Can you explain what a sidebar is?
So you have a match report, then you have a piece that goes alongside it.
Okay.
So it's the piece that goes alongside it. And so, you know, I was specifically watching the two of them rather than necessarily the rest of the game. So you watch the game in a slightly different way. And the number of runs he made without getting the ball. And then the goal came from him making that arcing run. Thorgan Hazard plays it forward. And that was, what, 42nd minute? And that was only the 10th time he touched the ball in the game, which is less than half any other outfielder. And, you know, he holds it up. So Ruben Dias bounces off him. His pass inside is maybe a fraction too far ahead of Kevin De Bruyne, so the ball's lost. So, you know, he's if anything, on the statistical breakdown, that's going to be a misplaced pass. And yet it's that run, it's that break that disrupts the Portuguese defence. It gets the ball 60 yards down the pitch. And it also means that when the ball is then very quickly regained, there's a space in front of Thorgan Hazard so he can line up the shot. And Lukaku has caused all of that, but he'll get no credit for it. And he was doing that all game. And, yeah, the energy, the selflessness to do that, I think is extraordinary. I think he's probably the best classic centre-forward in the world at the moment.
Natasha?
Yeah, just want to back up what Jonathan was saying about Lukaku. Even at the end, he did a 40-yard run. And you saw at the end, he was completely knackered just for them to keep possession of the ball, run the clock down. I think, yeah, a lot of people don't appreciate that side of his game, but I think he showed it really well this evening.
Natasha, do you think, is Rui Patricio blameless for that goal with these modern footballs? It was like a shoot size five, wasn't it? A flyaway.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It looked like there was something on it. It looked like it swerved away from him. You always want to give the goalkeeper the benefit of the doubt, and I want to give the credit to the striker tonight.
Okay. Anyone? I agree with you. It's his bat. It's his. David Priest tweeted that, you know, it was the move to the right, and the ball swerved. But it did look like it went in the middle of the goal, John.
Yeah, I don't know. It swerved, didn't it? I think Rui Patricio is a good goalkeeper. I think maybe he was caught on the hop by that. Can we blame this for the pitch as well? Maybe it's that.
Yeah, let's blame the pitch.
The pudding pitch produced some sort of refractory spin that confuses even the best goalkeepers in football. Let's put it that way.
I just think it's one of those things that happens, isn't it? That kind of every now and again somebody has a shot, it looks like it's going one way, the keeper moves, and then it swerves. And I'm not really sure there's much you can do about that.
No, I don't think so.
Crypto Kiwi says, so far there have been over 100 goals at the Euros, none from a direct free kick. What's happened to the dead ball specialists? Ronaldo had one that hit the target and one that hit Renato Sanchez, I think. Mm. Is there a problem there, Wilson? Are there just no good dead ball specialists?
It's interesting. I mean, Ronaldo is not a good dead ball specialist. Of his last 51 free kicks in major tournaments, only one's gone in. And maybe more than that, but 51 is the stats that we have. I don't know. I mean, normally I think if you look at how many direct free kicks are scored, that's a pretty good measure of how good a ball is. So, for instance, for Jabalani was almost impossible. I'm not sure any of you did score a direct free kick. That's not true. Kisika Honda scored against Denmark. But there were very few. Except for the Cup of Nations, that's the stat with the Jabalani. There's a Cup of Nations in 2010. There was no direct free kick scored. I tend to think that the better the ball, the more controllable the ball, the more direct free kicks go in. But the ball seems fine in every other respect. So I doubt that is the case this time round. So maybe we do some. Maybe Tuesday is Kieran Trippier's time for a hat-trick of brilliant free kicks.
We're talking about players that we may in part two, who knows, players that might end up at West Ham or not. I thought in the Premier League somewhere, Renato Sanchez, who I think has been so impressive. I mean, I don't know if he is angling for a move. I'm not in touch with his people, but I think he could really help any central midfield. I don't know. My memory of him is passing to an advertising hoarding, which I found on Twitter when he was playing for Swansea, where he just rolled the ball to the Carabao, at the horns of the Carabao, because the sort of red insignia of the Carabao was the same colour as the Swansea shirt.
Yeah, I saw him play for Swansea, Max, a couple of times, and that followed me having seen him play for Portugal when they won the Euros. And he was only a teenager at that time, wasn't he? He was 18 or so. And he's one of those players, actually. This happens to all journalists at a certain point, and this is one where you realise the player that you're trying to speak to in the mix zone is basically a child compared to you. And it was, he looked so young and so small and so innocent, and had played a total man's game in the game I'd been to. I think that was against Wales in the semi-final. And yet when I saw him against Swansea, he was completely lost. And I think he was at Lille last season. Didn't play, actually, as often as you might think for them last season, I think. But certainly for Portugal, he lights them up. And for someone who's so young, why not turn up at West Ham, Newcastle, Aston Villa? Other candidates are available. Tottenham's always the one that everyone links them with. Where he can work with Ryan Mason, the new Tottenham manager, maybe.
You sent us a picture of Ryan Mason reading some sort of self-help guru while lying on a sofa saying, getting ready for pre-season.
Yeah, which I thought was quite... Well, I don't know if this was a... Yeah, Ryan Mason in what looked like a rather nice...
rather quite classy, I think.
Like, what do people call that? They call that a den, don't they? You know, like
a den?
Yeah, and some pictures on the wall that looked like they had some sort of motivational thoughts on, which, weirdly, he'd blanked out, so we couldn't read those.
Oh.
But it did seem either a joke or provocative or point to the fact that actually Ryan Mason does still work at Tottenham Hotspur, which... I think Tottenham fans might have to get used to that idea, judging by the way things are going in the other direction.
On the subject of people passing to advertising hoardings, the special Ron got in touch to me saying, I think Damari Gray once passed the ball to that dog that moves on the advertising hoardings. I can't find the video, but it's funny. Some reaction to the game. Peter says the older a defender he gets, the dirtier they get. Pepe in a league of his own. Chris says Snickers are missing a trick. If there's a man who's hangry, it's Pepe. Nick, Pepe complaining about time wasting. Oh, joy. I'd love to see him at Burnley. That would be the dream, wouldn't it? The Italy game, who do we think... Who's progressing, Natasha, Belgium or Italy?
Yeah, I'm going to say Italy. They were my tip to win. And like we were saying about the injuries, Belgium have you... No De Bruyne, no Hazard... It's not looking good for them. They're going to be nervous. And I think Italy will feel really confident. And they've had more... Well, yeah, I think they'll be more confident, definitely.
Can you take out the third DVD on the left?
So this left?
Please. No, other side.
Okay.
Third on the left. One. From the right. Natasha sits in. Wilson sits in front of a bookshelf full of books. Bruin sits in front of the first Hovis Mill. And Natasha sits in front of all the DVDs. And I'd like the third DVD, please.
Oh my God, this is brilliant. So it's
what is it?
Liverpool Football Club, Champions of Europe. My boyfriend's a Liverpool fan. So it's the DVD of the Champions League win from 2005.
I'm very disappointed. I
What about the shelf above?
Shelf above. That's the one I'm looking at. That's the one we can
this
see.
One? This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Denzel Washington, Man on Fire.
Okay. Yeah. But Man on Fire 2 with Denzel Dumfries. Better. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll talk about Denzel Dumfries' last game in the Euros.
Before he joins West Ham.
Of course, before he joins. They're going to have such a big squad, West Ham, aren't they? As the Czech Republic beat the Netherlands 2-0. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Now, I've forgotten over the last couple of pods to remind you to vote for us and the Listener's Choice Award for the British Podcast Awards. You can do it by going to britishpodcastawards.com/vote and typing in Guardian Football Weekly and pressing vote. I believe in you, and I believe if Barry knows how to do it, any of you can do it. And, well, you don't have to, but if you do, it's great. And if you don't and we don't win, then we just won't talk about it ever again. So it depends whether you want us to crow about it or not. I suspect people won't vote for us now. But anyway, just do whatever you feel. Netherlands 0, Czech Republic 2 in Budapest. My two cents says, as pivotal moments go, is there a bigger one than Marlon missing a one-on-one and De Ligt getting sent off within about 60 seconds? Natasha, are we happy that that's a red card?
Yeah, I mean, it does change it, but that's only if the Czechs take advantage of the situation. Holland could have gone down to 10 men and we could be talking about a 0-0 draw with extra time because the Czechs didn't, you know, like we said, took their goals very, very well. I mean, Thomas Suchek, he was great for West Ham last season and he's been great for them again. I think maybe a lot of people didn't appreciate how good he was for West Ham. So I think watching him in the Euros, seeing him against a team like Holland and the players they have might surprise a lot of people as well.
So, yes, I was quoting the Paul Doyle law, which we've discussed on this pod before, John, which is if you deny a goal scoring opportunity, it's a penalty, but not a red card. It seems a better punishment to me. I mean, it will never change. I'm fighting a losing battle. And Paul, to be honest, he's not really working on it too hard, I've noticed. But does my law change make sense, or are you happy? Like it should be a red card. We all agree. I think we all agree on that. But are you happy that that is the law of the game?
The only thing I'd say about that being a red card is there is some accusation that Patrick Schick, future Tottenham striker, Patrick Schick, it was all over his back and he fell over and, you know, you have seen them given, haven't you, where the defender is bundled over. I'm not so sure about that. As soon as I saw it, I thought he's handled the ball in such a way that you thought, yeah, that's a red. And then there's that delay, and then that's when the doubts set in, and no one really knows, do they, until the VAR comes out. But Doyle's law, yes, fine. But I do think that you two are going to be playing that duet for the rest of time and no one's going to pay any attention to you. So I'm afraid that's where it's left. Can I just say I wasn't that surprised at what happened in this game? Not that I am Nostradamus, but I am acquainted with the managerial career of Frank de Boer. And I'll tell you a personal story. I've met Frank de Boer and interviewed him. Very nice chap. And it was ahead of a Champions League campaign, which unfortunately ended with them going out in the qualifiers to the mighty Rapid Vienna team of 2015, which is a team we all remember, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then they went into the Europa League then, and I saw them in that Europa League, and they didn't get through a group won by Molde and Fenerbahce. And then, of course, I actually went to two or three of the get matches that he was in charge of Crystal Palace for. I think Frank de Boer is a man who is a pure football man. You know, think of the breeding he had at Ajax and think of the company he's kept and the managers he's worked under. Unfortunately, he's not a very good manager. And OK, it was unfortunate with the sending off, but that team looked fairly unstructured, looked fairly... It's had a decent midfield, but midfield that was all sort of doing the same thing. The Dutch press, I don't think, were too happy with the three at the back. And then up front, I mean, Malen, 18-year-old, trusting him in a game like that? I'm not too sure. So, yes, I wasn't too sure. And I think there is a certain, with the Czech Republic, they have a certain Moisean quality. And I'm talking good David Moyes.
Right, OK.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they... they knew that they had to weather a bit of a storm and then take the chance, and both their goals were very well taken, weren't they?
Do you agree with that, Wilson? I mean, Frank de Boer is obviously getting hammered right now on social media, and you know, the Netherlands are a better team than Czech Republic, and they lost. But I do think without that red card, I appreciate what Natasha said. You know, you don't want to say without that, the Czechs wouldn't have won. But I thought the Netherlands were the better team until that moment. No?
Well, they probably were, but I didn't really see how they're going to break Czech Republic down. I mean, they got a couple of chances with long balls over the top early on, but the Czechs sorted out. You know, they dropped a bit deeper. And every time the Czechs went forward, they looked dangerous because they're so big. They're big and they play quite simple patterns, but quite effective patterns. Chival was getting in down the right behind Van Aanholt constantly. So obviously the red card changes it, but the red card doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in a context. And that context was of the Dutch getting slightly frustrated and not being able to break the Czechs down. And I think that does come back to De Boer. I think he never solved that problem on the Dutch left. And they never really seemed to have, once the long balls had stopped working, didn't seem to have any ideas of how they were going to get through the Czechs. So in De Boer's career, I just don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Because he won four titles in a row at Ajax, which, you know, even with the advantages Ajax enjoy in the Dutch league, that's still a big achievement. And that was all part of the Velvet Revolution at Ajax and Cruyff taking over and the reaction to Van Marwijk and the sort of slightly more physical, slightly more rugged Dutch at the 2010 World Cup. And then as soon as he leaves, you know, his career's been dreadful. You know, 82 days at Inter, 77 days at Palace, 18 unspectacular months at Atlanta United. And now this. And, you know, the group stage is one of those things where, before the tournament, their game against Scotland, they were a shambles. I mean, Scotland should have won that. It was a 2-2 draw. Scotland should have won that game. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to be flip-flopping on formations. There didn't seem to be absolutely no sort of clear plan. And to be fair to him, he was sort of parachuted in to an extent when Koeman left for Barcelona. But he was parachuted into quite a good situation with the national team. And it's gone wrong on his watch. And so in the group stage, yeah, they cruised through, but my sort of thing was, well, has he sorted this out, or is it just sort of average opposition? And I think the answer was there tonight. So, yeah, the red card makes a big difference, but I'm not sure it makes that big a difference.
Oh, I think I don't know, Natasha. Maybe I'm just too soft, but I think, you know, there is that 60 seconds where Marlon is through and, you know, could round the keeper, has loads of options, and that changed it. And suddenly, you know, trusting in an 18-year-old is trusting in an 18-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, it does change it, but that's only if the Czechs take advantage of the situation. Holland could have gone down to 10 men and we could be talking about a 0-0 draw with extra time because the Czechs didn't, you know, like we said, took their goals very, very well. I mean, Thomas Suchek, he was great for West Ham last season and he's been great for them again. I think maybe a lot of people didn't appreciate how good he was for West Ham. So I think watching him in the Euros, seeing him against a team like Holland and the players they have might surprise a lot of people as well.
Or I'll put it another way, imagine Chaluska had been sent off. Do you think the Dutch would have... Do you think the Czechs would have capitulated in the way the Dutch did?
I don't know, Jonathan.
Well, I agree with the point that Jonathan's driving at, which is... they looked a better structured team, didn't they?
Yeah, much better structured, yeah.
Their manager, Yaroslav Silavy, sorry, I had to look that up, who looks like he's in an indie band of the 1980s that are still touring and are perhaps performing, an American indie band of the 1980s, and they're still performing their most famous album from about 1985, like he was in Swans or something like that. The producer Ian will know what I'm talking about.
Producer Ian says he's one of the Chuckle Brothers.
Well, there is that as well. So he's a combination. He's a combination of both of those. So, but he does seem to be a very astute manager who knows what he's going to get from his players, and that is actually the opposite of what we've decided about Frank de Boer, isn't it? You could say that Frank de Boer was an unlucky manager, but he sure gets unlucky a lot of the time.
I mean, I did write that. You know, look, as we know from Football Managers. I don't believe there's a football manager who hasn't said this. It's never easy playing against 10 men. The Czechs Natasha did make it look quite easy to play against 10 men.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't skip a beat, did they? And like I said before, they took the opportunity, looked at the clock and thought, we've got 35 minutes. We want to go through. This is our opportunity. Yeah. And I think when we're talking about the managers, it's not just the manager knows what he wants from his players. The players also all look like they know what the manager wants and expects from them. There's no confusion on the pitch. Everyone as a team is playing together. And there wasn't that cohesion from Holland tonight.
Thomas Hollis scored the first, a very sort of Ensley League goal. I was a big fan of it. Great header back across goal from Callas. And then Hollis' break, John, was brilliant for Schick's goal, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great. And then a vision to play in Schick. You know, think about that moment. Compare it to Marlon's loss of composure, you would say, in that incident that probably turned the game. He plays the ball in. He knows that if he plays the ball to a striker in form, then the checks are going through. And he did just that. And Schick's red hot at the moment. And as I say, during every tournament, there are certain players who, certain Premier League clubs are going to look at. And we've just got to place him somewhere, really, haven't we?
Well, Tyler says, who will West Ham sell Schick to at a loss after a disappointing showing next season?
Yes. Well, yeah, you can see West Ham, who have a habit of doing this, of proclaiming someone as a true star of the Euros. I think they did that with Winston Reid, World Cup star, he was described at, because he was quite good for New Zealand back in 2010. But Patrick Schick, actually, he would be quite good in the David Moyes team, wouldn't
he? Well, and plenty of people he already plays with.
Yeah, it works for me. And I'm sure it works for David.
West Ham could become to the Czech Republic as Shakhtar Donetsk is to Brazil.
Will they naturalise all the Czechs? Is that what they'll do eventually? And they'll become
make them proper EastEnders.
They'll be proper Cockneys. They'll be eating jellied eels. All these Czechs.
Well, bring Thomas Repka over to show him how to eat jellied eels. Yeah.
Tom says, and lots of questions along these lines: is the fact that England's path to the final would be Sweden, Ukraine, and then Denmark, Czech Republic, going to make Tuesday's defeat on penalties even more heartbreaking? Look, this result shows that you can't just look at a draw and look at eight teams and go, well, those eight teams are better than those eight teams, and therefore it's coming home. But you do look at this and go, hang on, the 2018 World Cup draw opened up if on Tuesday. Is that silly? Is it silly to think that, Natasha?
That football's coming home? Yeah,
well, just to think, look, as opportunities go, if England beat Germany, and that is a big if, I'm not even saying Germany aren't the Germany of 1990, you know.
I think if England are to beat Germany, I think the teams that would be next, they're going to struggle in a different way from, say, maybe playing in Belgium, because those teams are hard workers. They set out their stall, they've got their game plan, and I don't know that the way England have been playing, they have enough to unpick a solid team like that.
But also, it'll be such an easy run to the final, then we'll suddenly turn up against a good team and just be so complacent. Wilson, your head's in your hands.
Well, I mean, I think it's never good to get ahead of yourself.
Okay.
But also, Southgate's been setting up to play against good sides, and the group was almost a sort of, yeah, we'll assume we'll get through that. If we don't, we're never going to win the thing anyway. And the type of football played in the group was not really designed for that kind of opponent. But the problem is that kind of opponent, indeed, literally one of those opponents, is who England would end up facing were they to beat Germany. And that may not be the best thing. If England have decided to be dull and stolid, and they face potentially the kings of dull and stolid in Sweden, and then the Czechs who are dull, solid, and really, really big, that might not be good news at all.
Oh, God. Anyway, there was real confusion off the pitch about whether rainbow flags were allowed into the stadium or not allowed into the stadium. Dutch media reported fans were being told not to take any rainbow-coloured symbols into the ground or the fan zone. UEFA then said, look, contrary to some reports in the Dutch media, UEFA would like to clarify it's not banned any rainbow-coloured symbols from the fan zone in Budapest, which is under the responsibility of the local authorities. UEFA would very much welcome any such symbol in the fan zone. UEFA today informed the Hungarian Football Federation that rainbow-coloured symbols are not political. even though a really massive Bayern Munich-sized stadium was a political symbol. It informed the Hungarian Football Federation rainbow-coloured symbols are not political, in line with UEFA's Equal Game campaign, which fights against all discrimination. Malcolm noticed, and I don't know if you saw this, that quite a lot of the sponsors, I definitely saw TikTok and a few others, had the rainbow symbols. Qatar Airways didn't. It's a muddle, isn't it, John?
Yeah, the one I kept seeing was the travel agent, if I can mention their name,
sure.
Booking.com. Yeah, I noticed that, and well, it's not often you say this, but fair play to the advertisers, really, because there's not really anything that UEFA could say about that, because obviously they're paying for this privilege. If it annoys Big Vic Orban, all the better. Budapest and Hungary and Orban has been a rather problematic part of this tournament, hasn't it? And there are certain people out there that seem to still think that, hey, it would be much better to play the semi-final and final in Budapest because you allow more fans in and they've enjoyed themselves over there. I think that comes at a terrible cost, personally.
The problem, really, I have a little bit of sympathy with UEFA in that they clearly can't be directing a country's police forces. So by this stage, there's not much UEFA can do. The issue is that when you're dishing out hosting rights, you've got to be really, really clear what is and what is not acceptable. And I suspect this is a foretaste of what's going to happen in Qatar in 18 months.
Yeah, well, no one could disagree with that, Jonathan. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And we have seen this every time, haven't we? Certain, what would be the word?
Less progressive nations.
Yes, and the compromises that are eventually chosen by the governing bodies in the various countries are often pretty unsatisfactory, aren't they? Let's put it that way.
If UEFA are saying there's no problem with rainbow flags and they're not political and they're not banning them, then how can they hold tournaments in countries, or how can football hold tournaments in countries that do not share those beliefs and those morals? It just doesn't make sense to me. It's illogical.
All right. Well, look, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll round up any other business and look ahead to tomorrow's games too. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So tomorrow, we've got Croatia, Spain and France, Switzerland. John, Croatia, Spain, how do you see it?
Do I perhaps see it as the latest chapter in the travails of Alvaro Morata? Because I do think Luis Enrique will continue to place faith in him. What you would say is that this game is a clash of reasonably similar styles. It's a game in which the midfields of both teams are going to be the strongest aspects of the two teams on show.
No Perisic for Croatia, which is big, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think I was reading that of the goals he scored, he's responsible for 75% of them or something like that. So that is a big blow. And obviously,
Of the goals Perisic has scored,
the
others have just hit him accidentally.
Of the goals Croatia have scored, I should say.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So he's been very important to them, because beyond that, you know, Kovacic and Modric in midfield, he's the guy that adds thrust to them, and he would be missed, yes. But I suppose Croatia are relying on the latest Spanish psychodrama to see it through, and they're a robust enough group of individuals to pull through, I'd say. I'm not saying that this will be a shock, but I don't rule Croatia out completely.
And Natasha, what's your hunch on this one?
I think it'll be an interesting game. I think Modric will again do what Modric does, and I don't think it'll be very easy for Spain. But Morata, I think there's a lot of players tomorrow who have a lot to prove, including some of the French players when they play Switzerland.
Oh, which French players are you looking to prove themselves?
More stories today about Mbappe, his ego. There was obviously the row with him and Giroud. And I just think if the manager's going to stick with him, he's not had the best tournament so far. He needs to go out there and perform. They're in the knockout stages now. And, you know, people will be looking to him to score the goals.
Mbappe will... He's not going to drop Mbappe. He might drop Benzema. I don't know what you think, Wilson.
I mean, I doubt he'll drop Benzema when he's just scored two goals in the last game. Um, But the fact is that forward line isn't gelling yet. I think maybe with Tolisso there, there's more natural width, and that probably works. But you've got that issue of Griezmann goes so deep that there can be a bit of a gulf opens up between the midfield and the forward line, which is where Matuidi was so important at the World Cup. And I don't really think they found a player to replicate his role. The Swiss player back three is the same as Hungary. The French didn't particularly perform well against that. And they play it much more defensively than say, Germany did in that opening game. So, I mean, you assume France will go through, but it could be a pretty grim watch.
Excellent. Well, something to look forward to then. Official Gorkin says, have any of you sang a song with as much passion as the Italians sing their national anthem? Natasha, when was the last time you sung something with that passion?
Oh, my God. I don't know, but I'm guessing I definitely at some point in my life have sang Whitney Houston with that kind of passion.
Like, which Whitney Houston number? From The Bodyguard? Is that on your DVD show?
I Have Nothing's a good one. Okay. I Have Nothing's a very good one.
That is quite a good one. Okay. I think I've probably done The Voice John Farnham with that sort of passion.
Yeah.
About sort of, it's the unofficial national anthem of Australia. Certainly our wedding party, which Barry didn't come to, but said, I almost invited Wilson just to be company for Barry, but then I didn't in the end. John, you were about to come in. You're a music snob. What have you sung loudly? Something by The Fall? The Ramones?
No, it's actually Ain't No Doubt by Jimmy Nail.
Oh, good.
Wow. I didn't expect that.
All situations? Or just, is there a specific...
It's a karaoke favourite. And I do a sort of cod Geordie accent with the spoken word bit. And then launch into the impassioned Jimmy Nail vocals.
So at the next live show, John.
Yeah,
You will you perform Ain't No Doubt Jimmy Nail?
Well, if you pay me. Jimmy Nail, actually, who, you're on Facebook Memories.
Yes.
I noticed the other day that it will be 3 or 4 years since I left the Guardian office at lunchtime one day. And who should I run across but Jimmy Nail walking down the street? So I've got a great picture of Jimmy Nail's back walking down York Way. And he's in good shape. I can tell by the back for a man of his age. Let's put it that way.
Oh, excellent. Wilson, do you ever sing?
I suspect the last time I sang...
Not on the terraces.
I think it would have been at school when we had to sing. Are you aware of the Lambton Warm? Great Sunderland folk song.
I'm not, but I'm looking forward to it.
So there's a legend that if you drive up to Sunderland, the thing that says you're getting towards Sunderland is Pencher Hill. Pencher's where Alan Kennedy was born, so it has a footballing relevance. And Jordan Henderson's often very far away at all. And on the top of that hill is a monument, like the Acropolis. But round that hill, the story is that during the Crusades, there was... I've leapt ahead slightly here. So the son of a local landowner...
You know, Wilson, everyone's just going, sing us the song, but
called John, Brave Sir John.
Right.
But this is before he's Brave Sir John. He's just John, a feckless lad. He's going out fishing on a Sunday, which obviously is a bad idea. Should be in church. And he caught a fish up on his hook. He caught a fish upon his hook,
mm-hmm.
And he couldn't be fashioned it back. He couldn't be bothered to throw it back.
Right.
So he threw it down a well, and then when he went away, the serpent, began to swell.
Right.
And he went off to the fight in the Crusades. The worm wrapped itself seven times around Pencher Hill, and it demanded... I can't remember, sheep or virgins or both. I can't remember. But that was its diet, essentially.
Right. Arguably not interchangeable, but not important at this stage, I imagine.
Well, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe you eat sheep most of the year and have virgins on special occasions. Not my type of thing, but yeah.
Okay,
you know.
Fine.
And then Brave Sir John comes back from the Crusades.
Right.
And the thing with the worm was people had tried to kill it, but it was capable of regenerating, and also it's like a boa constrictor. It crushed you.
Oh.
And so he went to a local blacksmith. He had this special armor made with spikes on it, so that if it tried to constrict him, it would actually be hurting itself.
Oh, of course.
And he very cleverly engaged it on an island in the weir, so that when he chopped its head off, rather than regenerating, the head was washed out to sea.
Uh-huh.
And so he saved the sheep and virgins of South Sunderland.
Can we just have a little bit of it?
No, not for me. I mean, I would ruin it. The chorus goes, and I'll speak it.
Okay.
Wished
okay.
Lads had your gobs. So hang on, chaps, be quiet. And I'll tell you his Alan Apple story. And I will tell you all the dreadful story. Wished lads had your gobs, and I'll tell you about the warm.
And this was a song you actually sang at school.
Yeah, it's really long.
Are you not the same age? I mean, what?
Yeah, in like 1750 or something.
What year is this?
No, it's like, you know, the Newcastle people would sing Blade and Races, and right. We would have to sing that.
Oh, well, there we are.
And in fact, I remember there was. Do you remember the game when Roy Keane changed the weather by staring at it?
Mm-hmm.
So Sunderland at Cardiff in the promotion season of 2006-07, tremendous storm blows up just before kickoff. Sunderland have a wind the first half, bat at Cardiff. Cardiff can't get over half. The wind is incredible. I've never seen football played in conditions like it. It's pitch black. Rain. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Rain lashing down. I saw you looking at the clock there. You're not going to get away with that. I mean, they can't score. And 0-0 at half time. And I turned to you and Roberts, who sat next to me, and said, "Well, no way Sunderland can hang on here. This is Cardiff's." And sure enough, second half, Cardiff bombardment. Johnny Evans, magnificent. And then a quarter of an hour ago, Roy Keane, with his big Prospero beard, strides out to the touchline and stares at the clouds, which suddenly part. And I watched him do this. The clouds part, the sun comes out, the wind drops. He throws on Ross Wallace, who was, you know, 4'2", who scores the winner. And then on the train on the way back, there was a few Sunderland fans on the train who I knew. And one of them had a mate with him, who was an opera singer, who'd had a bit to drink, and he did the entire song, all 20-odd verses, and the whole carriage was joining in the chorus. It was presumably awful if you weren't a Sunderland fan, but most people there were, so a great day. What was the question?
I feel this is enough for today, but, you know, it's nice that the podcast goes in various directions. Thank you for your time. I know none of us have spoken except for Wilson for the last 25 minutes, but we were all on the pod. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Natasha.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Wilson.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow.
So know you now who are the folk on both sides of the weir. Lost the sheep and lost the sleep and lived in mortal fear. So let's have on to brave Sir John. We kept the bench for home. Save combs and cows by Mackinhaw to the famous London Wall.
Wish that I should glad to tell you my love story. Wish that I should glad to tell you both the war.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.